For joining us on VBS Radio today. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for this edition of Sound Health. That great music, What a Wonderful World, was by Mortonette. That's from a special album that Mortonette created when she appeared at our annual conference here at the Sound Health Center in Ohio. So for more information about Mortonette's music, it's just Mortonette, Mortonette.com. On the Sound Health Show, we attempt to bring you ideas and information in support of self-health. We have a very special guest today, but we have two announcements, and then we'll be with our guest, Donna Markova. Okay, announcement number one. Coming up in June, the 27th and 29th, there'll be a Health Freedom Expo in Chicago, Illinois, at the Renaissance Schomburg Hotel and Convention Center. There'll be hundreds of leading-edge health professionals, and for more information about that, healthfreedomexpo.com. The second announcement, we invite you to go to a website, NutraSounds, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, that's plural, NutraSounds.com, for a download offer for a computer program that can be used to reveal hidden motives and desires. Like the very popular music or movie, The Secret, that showed us all how we can get what we want through our own intention, this is easy-to-use software that can help you find out what you really want and how the decisions you make can influence and balance the harmony of your being. That sounds very good. Okay, today on the show we have Donna Markova. She's the author of Spot of Grace. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Thank you, Sherry.
I'd like to start this interview by reading something from your book. It's actually from the very back, page 244, but I just thought it was an incredible passage. And I think it'll just lead into the ideas of why you wrote this book, because it's a very special book. Okay, this is page 244. Painful events in childhood can mark one for life, freezing a person's capacity to yeast his or her own life and use it to nourish others. Can happy events mark us all for life as well, with a sense of buoyancy, permeability, and connection? If trauma is a moment of wounding pain and distress, what do we call the moments when we are healed, blessed, and blissed? Moments when we recognize or ignite the light in ourselves and each other and the world. If traumatic moments can cause a disconnection from ourselves and from that which we love, then there must be moments that mark us with an ongoing sense of resilience. I have searched in every dictionary and thesaurus I have for an antonym for the world, and I have found nothing. That's a wonderful passage. Is this why you wrote this book, or a piece of it?
Indeed it is. It's wonderful that you bring... That's one of my favorite passages in the whole book, because I got all the way through the book and then it was easier for me to describe exactly why I was writing it. And when I finished that, I went, yes, because so much of... I mean, everything in nature needs a balancing structure. Sunrise has sunset. There was a physicist, his name was Niels Bohr, and he said, the opposite of an ordinary truth is a lie, but the opposite of a profound truth is another profound truth. And for me, that creates a balancing structure that, yes, we all can be wounded, and yes, there is trauma and there is suffering, and we all know about it. And it is our responsibility also to create balancing moments and balancing structures. And I have been searching for most of my life for what is the balancing structure for trauma. And it became so obvious to me that these moments when we can reach out and touch one another and create grace within and between us is exactly the opposite profound truth.
Well, it's a wonderful little book full of joy and inspiration. I love the analogy that you use of the redwoods. Would you share that with our audience?
Well, the redwoods are, it's interesting because I live surrounded by redwood trees, and they are so immense, you know. I mean, some of them you have to walk quite a ways to work your way all around them, and they go, you know, you look up in the sky and they seem to just, you can't even see the top of them. And so you would expect that their root system would be very, very deep. But in fact, their root system is not very deep. In fact, it's very shallow and it's beneath the surface of the ground. And the reason that they can stay as tall as they are with a shallow root system is because they tangle their roots around other redwood trees. And so they hold each other up. And in fact, I believe that that's an incredible metaphor for what we can do for each other. If you ever see a redwood lying down because it's fallen from age or whatever, you can see the root system is very, very shallow. And so it is when the collection of stories really is about moments from 100 different people from around the world when someone else held them up or when they held someone else up, when they were at an intersection where they didn't know how they were going to deal with the winds and the storms of their life, and someone came and did something very simple, and it was because of that act of connection that they could find their stability again and their balance.
That's beautiful. Did you write this book for yourself or for us, the audience, or kind of a combination? Or
yes. the incident that triggered the book was actually my sister's death. I was part of creating a book and a movement called Random Acts of Kindness many years ago. And people have been asking me ever since, would you do the follow-up to Random Acts of Kindness? Well, you can't do a sequel to a book like that. It became a world movement. And 2 years ago, my sister, who was the last member of my family of origin, was diagnosed with a brain tumor, a terminal brain tumor. And for most of those 2 years, she was very much like a vegetable. She couldn't talk. She couldn't do anything. And so I spent a good percentage of my life with her in those 2 years. And a lot of those moments of those 2 years was sitting with her and talking to her and realizing, thinking about what a difference she had made in my life. She was my older sister by 7 years. And what I realized was that she taught me to see beauty in the world, which was no small thing. She saw beauty in art and in objects, and I saw beauty in people. But nonetheless, she taught me that there was such a thing as beauty. And that was an incredible gift. So a lot of those 2 years was telling her stories about how she mattered to me and to other people. And I think the stories that I told her and other people told her were, in fact, medicine for her. So when she died last June, I was aware in the grief I was experiencing and the sense of being like an orphan, even at 66, I was an orphan. I decided, I'm at an intersection. I can isolate in my grief, or I can reach out and connect in my grief. And I decided to do the latter, and I wanted to create a book of stories that was a tribute to my sister. And so I sent an email out to the 2,500 people in my mailing list asking them, who was it that taught you that you matter, that you are unique, that you have a gift to bring to the rest of us? Or who did you reach out to and help them realize that? And in the beginning, I got no responses, or I got responses that, like, are you kidding? Unique? I'm one of 7 billion people. You know what? There's nothing unique about me. But gradually, stories started coming in, and people started sending my email to other people in other countries, and a flood was released. as in the same way that it was with Random Acts of Kindness. And people started sending stories from Sweden and Peru, and thousands of stories, literally. And so I picked 100 of them. And those 100 became the book.
Do you have a favorite one? That's what I was going to ask.
I don't have a favorite one. I have many favorite ones, actually. It depends upon my moment and my mood. Some people tell me, well, you know, they just flip the book through the book and a story comes to them. And that turns out to be the story for the day. And I like doing that. I like having a story for the day. And some of these stories are very, very simple, and some are very deep and profound, but they all seem to be universal. They seem to be true for all of us. So would you like me to read you a story?
Yes.
I would love it, Sherry. This one is relatively close to you. It comes from Peggy Meter in Troy, Michigan. "Mom, I'm different." Many adolescents are confused about their identity or feel self-conscious, but my 11-year-old daughter has autism, so most of our communication is like solving a puzzle. It takes a while to get to her real concern or feelings about a subject. She has always been sensitive to being rejected on the playground or to people looking at her, but it wasn't until recently that she expressed the feeling that there were kids in this world who look, act, or think differently than she does. It's one of those double-edged swords of autism. My daughter knows there's a difference between her and the general population, and that knowledge can help her to progress or can cause serious depression. Because she's unable to expound on her thoughts or feelings, I didn't know right away what she meant by feeling different. Was it that she wears protective ear covers for her sensitive ears? Was it that she rocks when she talks? Was it that she was adopted from Guatemala and has thick, curly brown hair and black eyes? Or that she went through an early puberty and has already blossomed into a young woman? Or that she's often grouped with other special education children rather than her fifth grade peers? Sometimes she'll give me a specific hint at what's bothering her, but trying to tell her that she's exaggerating when she says that everyone has straight blonde hair except me only makes her frustrated. And sometimes when she says that her brain is different, she just wants to know that I'm listening. I give her facts about her heritage. I build on her strengths by filling the house with her drawings of wolves and dragons. I tell her she's the best thing that could have ever happened to this family, which she is. But when Lillian started talking about feeling different, I needed another tool to help her. I decided to teach her a new word, unique. I told her that people are not like cars and don't come out of a factory. I explained that everyone is different, and each one is an amazing combination and mixture of eye color, hair color, and skin color with a unique way of thinking and acting and feeling. She was silent for a while, and I didn't know if she understood or could process what I was explaining. The next day, we drove past a park and saw a group of fair-haired children screaming and spinning on a merry-go-round. I noticed from her body language that something about the scene had sparked a different feeling again. I prepared to listen with empathy and information, but instead of complaining, she just gave me a little smile and said, "Mom, no one's alike. Everyone is unique." I sighed in relief, knowing that we can survive autism together, one lesson at a time.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the reason is that we fail to support each other in these small understanding ways? Is it not enough time or fear of rejection? Or did you get a feel for that while you were writing the book?
Well, I think I've gotten a feel for that in my life, actually, because a lot of what I've noticed in working with kids and people who feel different in that way, for whatever reason, is that we have been trained to notice our deficits and not our assets. And what that means is that as babies, you know, we learn to reach out to grab a cup and we get air and then we get mommy's hair and then we get oatmeal and then we get cup. And then we get oatmeal and mommy's hair and cup and then oatmeal, cup, cup, cup. So we're naturally wired to track success. But at least from the time we enter school, if not before, we're taught to track failure. So if a baby reached out and got oatmeal, and instead of tracking success, tracked failure, the baby goes, oh, what a stupid baby I am, why did I get oatmeal? Which is what most of us do as adults. We begin our day by reminding ourselves of all of our weaknesses and our failures. We're very articulate at that. We end our day by reminding ourselves of everything we did that was wrong and wasn't good enough. And so our attention is continually tracking the hole and not the donut. And I don't think you can ignore, nor am I saying that you ignore or you avoid what our challenges and our weaknesses and our limitations are. But we do need a balancing structure. And so part of why I wrote this book was as a balancing structure. Random acts of kindness was a balancing structure for all the random acts of violence in the world. And the internet is so filled and the news is so filled with everything that's wrong. So there is a website called spotofgrace.com, and it is a collection of these stories and people sending me stories on YouTube and people that hear me on radio programs sending in stories to be a balancing structure. So when the darkness gets to be too much, there'll be a place you can go and just shift to the light.
Do you think any of this could be because we tend not to want to fix what's already okay, but we want to fix the bad stuff or the things that we're negative about? So we really don't concentrate on the good. We concentrate on what we think we ought to fix.
Exactly, exactly. Many, many, many decades ago, I was a classroom teacher, and I was trained to put, you got 16 wrong on the spelling test, not you got 4 right. And so I was trained to rather than to say to children, how did you get those 4 right? What did you do? How did you know that? I was trained to put their attention on what they couldn't do. And it isn't the way that we are wired. We're trained to pathologize, to make something into a pathology, a sickness. But we need to shift what I call our mythologies, the stories we tell ourselves. We tend to tell ourselves stories that are what I call rep stories. It's the same thing over and over again. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. And in paying attention to those ruts, we forget that we are a miracle, that we are unique, that we are one of a kind.
You remind me of a story that happened in my life. I was driving in a car with my sister-in-law to go pick up her kindergarten child, and he got in the car and he had this paper in his hand. He said, Mom, look, I learned what green lights and red lights are for. And she looked at him and said, oh, shut up, everybody knows that.
Right.
And I turned around and I said, Chris, I don't know about that. Could you talk to me about it? And you could watch him change from this little head down pout, I'm a horrible person, to, somebody wants to listen to what I learned today.
Exactly.
And it's just those really simple things that really help. Do you think inspiration is as important as support? Because these stories that I'm reading your little book are about, they're not only inspirational, but they're support. And what really is the difference there, and which one is more important, or is either of them as equally important?
Well, I think inspiration is support. I mean, inspiration means literally to take spirit in or to take breath into you. And if you hold your breath and you don't do that, you discover you're very anxious. And most of us, or many of us anyway, live our lives anxious in that way, hopping from the next thing to the next thing to the next thing, and paying attention to what we did wrong. And the moments that we have in our life that are sweet and precious, moments when we could make a difference, moments when we could let life make a difference and matter to us, we miss completely. And I think for me, cancer has come in my life 3 times. And each time it comes with the same teaching. You know, it tells me, you worry about money, but you can borrow money. Somebody else can give you money. You can earn money. Your moments that you have, a finite number of moments, they are your true wealth. And nobody can give you more moments. Nobody can lend them to you, no matter how much they love you. You have a finite number. So spend them in a way where you let life matter to you and you let yourself matter to life the way you did as an aunt.
That is such a peaceful statement. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think we need to learn to bring inspiration from the inside out, or do you think, depending on people to provide it to us? I mean, which way is the right way, should way, ought way?
Yeah. Well, I think it's like a circle. I mean, we've been very, for the last 10 or 20 years, we've been very tied up with motivation. And motivation is you provoke from the outside in someone to fix themselves, right? But inspiration is a totally different thing. Inspiration is what is literally built into our brain. We have these synaptic connections in our brain to connect to one another through stories. And there's a whole way that your brain tells narratives of what was and what is and what will be. And there has never been a society of human beings that has not told stories. There's been societies and cultures that don't have the wheel, but there's never been one that doesn't tell stories. So I think what someone else's story does is it reminds us, as I told you a story and it reminded you of you and your niece. In Hawaii, they call that talk story. We have these abilities, the ornate word for it is associative abilities, that something reminds you of something else. So if you're watching a television program and it's about war and people dying and starvation, you remember the times you were hungry, you try to not pay attention to that, you remember when you were at war with your Uncle George, whatever. Likewise, if you read a story about a woman who turned around to her niece in a car and said, "Now tell me about that, that's incredible that you noticed the red and the green," then you begin to think that story inspires. There's like a little teeny-weeny gasp, and you go, "Oh, I remember the first time I ever saw a stoplight that had red, green, and yellow." Or, "I remember my favorite Aunt Sylvia who used to read me Mark Twain." So we remind each other of what and how to give our attention in our lives.
Do you think your book will teach people to stop and inspire?
I don't know. I have no idea. What I know is that my faith is that every child, every human being has a gift that my grandmother called a spot of grace, and that they're meant to bring that to the world. They're the only one that can. I believe that every person deserves to have unlimited access to this seed in their soul, as my grandmother said. And I have huge faith that each of us brings a unique value to the world that nobody else can bring. And that's what I call my profession. I mean, I was trained as a neuroscientist and a cognitive psychologist and a teacher and all these things. That's my profession. The word profession means to profess faith. So if I can give voice and energy to that faith that I have, then every one of my days will count for something. And if not, then every day will be wasted. And I don't intend to do that.
Well, the idea that your moments are your wealth is just awesome. We often take a call, so I'd like to take a break here and give people the numbers that they can call and ask Donna a question if they'd like. The toll-free number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227. The toll-free number in Canada, and this works in the U.S. too, is 888-815-9756. And the direct number is 530-876-3222. And as always, and our people like to write us email that we can read, and that's radio@vocalprofileing.com. And if you forgot all of those numbers already, just go to bbsradio.com. This is station one that we're on, and all those numbers will be listed there. Do you have another favorite story that you could read to us?
Yes, I have. This is, I think, the simplest story in the book. But maybe that's why I love it so much. So let's see if I can find it now. I lost my little sticky that was on it. Here we go. It's called That Shining, and it's by John Welshens in Little Falls, New Jersey. One day in the 1980s, I was walking down 57th Street in New York City in the midst of a deep depression. I was having a difficult day, feeling troubled and anxious. Suddenly, a young woman coming the other way glanced at me and smiled. even then, it wasn't common for someone to smile at a stranger in New York City, particularly a woman at a man. Her smile was just so pure, loving, and kind. It looked like a guru's smile. It magically lifted my spirits. I felt my heart open and soften. All the problems I felt burdened with melted away. Now, some 25 years later, I still remember the beauty of her smile. I still remember the silent kindness that came from someplace shining in her, touching something shining in me. I had no idea that such a bright place existed under all the darkness in me. Knowing that changed everything. I can never again be able to take my troubles quite so seriously, remembering that something as simple as a smile can ignite that shining. It still amazes me that such a simple moment can have an effect that lasts for decades.
And smiles are so free, it doesn't cost you anything.
Right. And in talking to John after he sent the story in and calling him up and telling him how simple and exquisite the story was, he says, you know, I kept thinking, could she be kind? Why did she do that? Why? It was like she was looking through me. And I went to the men's room and I looked in the mirror and I kept saying, what did she see in me that made her light up like that? There must be something. And he said, I kept asking myself that question and asking myself that question for weeks until I realized that even asking the question, what could it be in me that made her look like that, was changing the way I was living my life.
Do you think people need to start with themselves, to feel good about themselves so they can feel good about others? Like this lady that gave the smile, and it was such a genuine thing for him. Do you think she just genuinely felt good about herself and just translated that to him?
I have no idea. I mean, that's part of the mystery. I think that it works both ways. You know, we are in our brains when we reach out to someone in a very genuine way, whether it's a random act of kindness or it's recognizing in someone else that they are unique, the way you do when you hold a newborn infant, you know, and you have that sense of wonder. Just what an incredible miracle this is that you're holding in your hands. And I know when my son was born and I took him out of the hospital, there were all these people walking in the street, and I thought, someone held each of the people that's walking past me with that same sense of wonder and awe and recognition that they have a spot of grace inside them. Each of these people that's walking by. And that never left me. But what I know is that whether it is reaching out to someone else and recognizing the grace in them or having someone reach to you really doesn't matter. Our brains produce what's called endorphins, and endorphins make us feel good. And I think the reason they want, you know, that we're wired that way is that nature wants us to be doing this reaching and connecting with one another in ways that are genuine and sincere. And sometimes a lot of the stories in the book, all the stories in the last third of the book, are about people that recognize their own spot of grace by recognizing someone else's. So they reached out and they, like that woman did, and touched someone else's, and it helped them realize that place inside them where grace must live as well.
I haven't read the entire book. I just did what you suggested. I just opened it to a place that I found peace in. Is there a list in there of some of the little things that people can do to stop and inspire other people? Like a smile, that's an easy one.
Well, there is. The way that I arranged the book was I took all the stories that came to me, and I put them on the floor in my house, and I walked up and down the house asking, how do these stories want to be arranged? And I wrote a book called I Will Not Die, An Unlived Life. And the last, it was named after a poem that I wrote. And the last two lines in the poem are, may I take that which came to me as seed and pass it to the next as blossom. And that which came to me as blossom and pass it on as fruit. And so as I walked next to these stories, I realized that that's how they were naturally organized, that some were stories of seed of people that have touched the writer. Some were stories of blossom, where challenges helped the writer recognize the seed of light in them, because challenges are what break open the shell around a seed, so there can be a flower. And some were fruit stories. There were stories where people reached out to another in recognizing them, and that helped them find their own spot of grace. And then the whole last section of the book is called Orchard, because it's about simple things that any one of us can do, where we can reach out and make these connections that are connections of recognition. I'm not saying everybody should go around, you know, like putting whipped cream over garbage. I'm not saying people should smile and be nice and all the rest. If it's not genuine, there's no connection there. If someone says, oh, you look so lovely today, there's no connection there. But they can be simple recognitions. You have to actually search and recognize. Yesterday I was in a cafe and the man poured my cup of tea, and he did it so slowly with so much care. And I said to him, how did you learn to pour tea like that? And he started telling about his grandma and how she taught him to serve people, and about his life and how he worked on ocean liners. And, you know, everybody ignored him, but he found great joy in serving people with exquisite attention. So between us, there was a moment of grace. He walked away grinning, and I walked away feeling really good, asking him a question that made him light up.
Touching, yes.
Yeah, touching is exactly the right word.
In the book, there is so much that inspires people and gets to their heart and sort of makes them light up. The opposite side of that, we just got an email in that I'll read you in a minute, but the opposite side of that, do you think this lack of acceptance is a core of our unhappiness with ourselves?
Well, all you have to do is take an hour and do an experiment rather than my giving them the answer. So take an hour and have the inner conversation that you have with yourself, noticing everything that's wrong with you, that's wrong with your life, and that's wrong with other people. Talk to yourself about the bills you have to pay, what's still done on you to do on your list. And spend an hour like that, and then stop for 3 or 4 minutes, notice the effect on your senses, your energy, your relationships. Then take a deep breath and go for a walk or something, shift gears. And spend an hour, an equal hour, noticing the gifts in your life, looking for what it is about people. Who was it that made it possible for you to eat your lunch on clean white plates? Who was it that stopped the traffic so you can cross? Who are all the people that stand behind you making it possible for you to go through that hour? And then stop at the end of that hour and notice the effect. And so the answer to that question will come from that one very simple experiment. And if somebody actually has the courage to do that experiment, then I think the answer, the effect of the answer will be very profound in their life, much more than anything I could say.
And I think sometimes people aren't aware of how thankful they could be if they'd just look around. This last weekend, my granddaughter had a car accident and was nearly killed, and thankfully she's okay now. And I hadn't gotten a thank you note for something, and that became so trivial. You know, it was her birthday, and it just was putting me in perspective. And the lawn wasn't mowed, and then my husband just almost killed himself, and that didn't matter anymore.
Right. Right.
All the little things, the people were much more important. And I often say, well, no one died.
Right.
Because that's the thing that you can't reverse.
Yes, yes. You know, what you remind me of, Sherry, is I had a very remarkable grandmother, and the book is filled with stories about her. And my father would bring me every Sunday of my life to her to spend that day with her. And he would come in complaining about me and say, oh, Donna talks too much. Oh, you know, if she doesn't shut up, she's not going to ever have any friends. And, oh, Donna doesn't eat enough. If she doesn't eat more, you know, she's going to be skinny and be really sick. And without realizing it, he was cursing my future. My grandmother, as soon as he closed the door, would put one hand on my forehead and one hand up to the sky, and I was sure that she had a personal telephone line to God. And she would say, God, I know that Donna talks a lot, but someday she'll tell stories that will make people get well. And I know she doesn't eat very much now, but someday she will be nourishing people and herself when she grows up to be a woman. So what my grandmother was doing was blessing my future. And I then had maps, both maps. I had my father's map that said, every time I talk too much, I'm going to be alone. And I had my grandmother's maps that said my future had possibilities in it. And I grew up with that as a practice in my life to bless other people's futures. Now, I could just as easily curse their future. You know, oh, that jerk, he drove my car off the road. I hope he smashes into a tree. But then I'd go in, I'd feel lousy. If instead I went, that jerk drove my car off the road. Someday may he notice and care about all the people around him. And then I had a sense of peace in my heart. That choice is mine. That choice is part of what Viktor Frankl called my personal freedom. Nobody in the world can take away that freedom that is mine as to what meaning I give to the events in my life.
Do you think everything happens for a reason?
I have no idea.
I would like to think that our life is like a book and there's nothing extraneous.
Yeah,
that we need
yeah.
it all and we need to pay attention to every word.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think that there is a wholeness and a harmony to life. And I think that just because I walk in the woods and I see it, I see this tree that's been hit by lightning and has fallen down, and the tree then became a home, what's called a nurse log, to thousands of other little plants. So I think that there is a harmony to life. But I think each one of us has to choose what Viktor Frankl was talking about. Viktor Frankl lived and survived in concentration camps during World War II because he told himself the story that he would survive so that he could teach other people when the war was over about peace. And it was that story that he told himself that made it possible for him to survive when other people died and didn't survive. And so I think if we become aware of the power we have to give meaning to the events of our life, to choose stories that are river stories instead of rut stories, I think we don't feel so impotent and powerless in the world and so helpless in the world.
I like that, river stories. An email came in, and it sounded like a poor me thing until you get to the end of it. It's kind of an awesome thing. I think it's a question for you.
Okay.
It rained again today, and the basement flooded again. My husband's out playing tennis at the club with his buddies. I went out in the rain and cleared out the rain trough. It was full of leaves and black gook, so I knew the stuff had been there since last fall. I work two jobs. He's retired and sits around watching sports on the TV until it's time to play tennis and golf. Last week he went to work and took my paycheck before the boss could give it to me. I'll never see any of it. I know when he gets home, I'll get another lecture on keeping my place, because he wanted to clean out the gutters himself. He's a good man. He was a good man once upon a time. I want to help him be that again. You talk about those small gestures. What can I do? Tell me just one small gesture that I can do and say to him to help him care again. I'm so tired of tiptoeing around and trying to say things just so he won't go off. I never know if he's going to rant or rave or just not talk to me. How can I help him? P.S. Please don't use my name on the air.
Okay. Well, I'm going to call her, I'll call her Mossy One. Because I went for a walk this morning. I took off my shoes and I was walking in moss. It feels so wonderful, especially when it's rained the day before. So, Mossy One, there are things you can do. One thing you can do, I mean, there's thousands of things. The things that come to me that you can do is, first of all, talking isn't always the best way to get through. It's like trying to walk through a wall, so sometimes writing works better than talking, just writing a note and slipping it under the pillow of somebody. Second of all, reminding somebody of their history, reminding someone of a time. So to write a note and say, you know, I was thinking the other day about 1994 when you brought me that big box of Valentine's candy. I was so surprised. I want you to know I still think about it to this day. And you can create a whole movement every day, slipping a note under his pillow about another time that you remember when he was kind, when he was caring, when he did make a difference to you. I think most of us, when we act in ways that produce suffering for other people, we just don't believe that we make a difference. We just don't notice the effect we're having. So it's always easier to grow heat in a room by lighting a fire than it is trying to get rid of the cold. The heat takes care of the cold by itself. So for the mossy one, that's my invitation for her to try.
That's a great time to go back to a time when he was happy and she was happy with that.
Right.
It sounds like she still wants to be happy with him. But that's a good lesson. Here's another one that's kind of neat. This is from Bill in Cottonwood, Arizona. When you are committed to a job or business and others are depending on you to provide for their families, how do you abandon that which you have built and move on to what makes you happy without feeling trapped for staying or selfish for wanting to leave?
Oh, Bill, thank you for that question. I think all of us these days have been caught in this great divide, is what I call it. This divide where it's always either or, it's either red states or blue states, it's either him or it's her, it's either them or it's me. But nature doesn't create divides like that, you know. Nature creates us to be whole. So a question that you can wonder with, a question that you can take in your mind and wonder when you take a shower, when you're driving your car. A friend of mine, this is a very relevant question to me because of the kind of cancer I have, the red cells in my body and the white cells in my body are in this either-or great divide, you know, and they don't communicate so well. So this friend of mine, a wonderful man whose name is Parker Palmer, who's written many great books, he gave me a question, and he said there was no answer to the question, but I could just hold the question and ask it to myself. And the question was, how can I live divided no more? And so indeed, I don't know why, but even when I say it now, it touches something right behind my sternum. So I walked with the question. I took showers with the question. I drove in the car and I just asked the question. And I didn't try to answer it. I just kind of let it, you know, like when you're a kid and you're walking and trying to not step on the cracks of the sidewalk. I just wondered with that question. And I noticed the ideas that came in my mind, the stories that came in my mind, the visions that came in my mind, because the human mind loves big questions like that can't be answered. So what I would offer is that question from Parker to me, to you, is how can you live divided no more? How can you have your passion and your life and also your loving and care for other people? Now, my conscious mind and rational mind and your rational mind cannot figure that out, but we all have a relational mind kind of, aha, that can figure out relationships that make bridges across divides that seem impossible. And so that's my blessing. Someday, may you find a way that both of those needs in you have a wonderful marriage, have a wonderful relationship. And I would love it if, when this happens, because I have total faith it will, if you send the story to spotofgrace.com.
Okay, I'll give that message. I've always probably heard it from you. No, I try to read these emails and make them kind of smaller and succinct, and this one I can't, but it's a great, great question. And I think the audience question is much more important than the questions I want to ask you. So, from Sally in Denver, Colorado. One day I was admiring some artwork when the artist came over to me. She stood for a moment beside me, then she seemed like she was waiting for me to speak. I did admire her painting, so I told her how much I liked the work and the use of the wonderful bright color combinations. She said to me that I could do the same kind of work. I assured her I didn't have such talent. And then she turned to me and said, or actually it says, then she turned on me and said, "You're just lazy and limiting yourself. You have the same talent as I do. You are just too afraid of failure to use it, and you're wasting your life. Just paint if you want to." Well, one, I did want to paint. I didn't want to paint. I wanted to admire her painting. Mm-hmm. I knew I can put paint on a canvas, but I'm not talented in the same way great artists are. This brings to mind several questions. If we could all be great at everything, then why isn't that the way the world works? Only a few of us are great at any one thing at a time. Why would she insist that I'm lazy just because I don't choose to do what she does in life? And two, why would she attempt to put someone down for admiring her work? Three, how can something like this be handled with grace? I can't imagine that she feels good about deflating people in such a manner, but I would have liked to have said something that would have supported her lovely work. Now, I can't look at it without hearing her harsh words. How can I be better prepared next time?
Oh, Sally, I love you. My sister was an art consultant in Denver and worked with the Denver Art Museum, so it's a very appropriate question. So I have a couple of layers of the response. The first is that one of the greatest dance ballet masters in the world said that a woman came to him, and she asked him, she danced for him, and she was very young, she was 13 or 14, and all he did was tell her everything that was wrong. And she went away, and she was furious, just furious, and hurt, deeply hurt. And she somehow got up her strength and, in spite of him, became a great dancer. And 13 years later, he came and watched her dance and said, I always knew you had talent. And she said, but you told me I had no talent. Why did you do that? He said, oh, I do that to all young dancers. And the ones who become dancers anyway are the ones that have the strength and the fortitude to become dancers. So that's the first level that I thought of your question. And I realized that there was a generation that believed that the way you make children strong is by being really hard and being hard on them. And so I can only believe that somebody did that to that artist and she believed it was the best that she could do. I wished what you could do is what my grandmother did for me, Sally. I wish you could have picked up her hand. I know this is outrageous, and I'm not suggesting you do it, but just imagine, because it'll make you chuckle. My grandmother would take my fingers and kiss each fingertip and point to it and say, do you see these marks at the end of your fingers? Never before in all the history of humankind has there been another such as you, and never again will there be. They prove you are unique. You carry your own gifts and talents that only you can carry to the world. And the world needs the gifts that only you can carry. And then she would go on to kiss the other 9 fingertips. So I wish you could do that to the artist, because indeed, you have your own gifts and talents, Sally. That we have gifts that have to do with performance. We have gifts that have to do with thinking. We have people that love well. We have people that bring humor in the world. We have people that think analytically and in numbers. We are all meant to be unique. And so that's what I'm going to think of when I think of you. And if you should ever meet anybody again like that woman, and I'm sorry that she had to suffer and that she caused so much suffering in the world that didn't need to be there.
You know, the commonality of these letters, I mean, there's obvious pain there, but the commonality is that they cared about the person that was talking to them and raining down the abuse.
Exactly. I mean, if there was nobody to receive art, to actually see it, why would anyone want to even create it? If there was nobody to listen to music and enjoy it, if there was nobody to listen to stories and enjoy them, then truly our souls would be leaking. You know, our souls leak when we stop being enchanted by a story or remembering how to dance or enjoying someone else dancing. So in Sally standing there and enjoying that painting that came through that woman, she was the other half, like the other half of a parenthesis. And unfortunately, that woman just couldn't take that in as the gift that Sally was giving to her. And that's very sad. But as I said, we've been trained to notice our own deficits, and then that's all we notice is each other's deficits.
Donna, we're almost out of time, and there's so many more things that I want to talk to you about. I would like to have them bring you back to the show, and but I want to put some important questions out to you, like, are you available for workshops and lectures, and do you have a website? And
Yes, you're asking all the right questions. The best way for people to find me is spotofgrace.com. It's one word. And the reason I like to send people there is because they get a gift when they go there. There's the story that my grandmother told me about how Grace came to be in the world, and someone drawing as I'm telling the story. There are stories from other people all around the world, there's video clips. And so it's a place to go to just, you know, and it's also a place to find me and connect with me and send me emails. I do on occasions give workshops. I do on occasions speak. And I don't lecture, but I like speaking with people and hearing their stories and evoking stories from them. So that's the easiest way to find me.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You feel so graceful within yourself. And I'd like people to read your book, and you can feel more of that on Amazon. You have 5 stars on Amazon, the highest rating. The book is $15 at a regular price. You can get it for $10.20 at Amazon. And they had some wonderful, wonderful, I'm lost for words here. What do you call it when somebody writes something about your book?
You call it when somebody writes something about your book.
So they write a nice little thing?
I'm very happy when people go to Amazon. And if they come to spotofgrace.com and buy the book, they get a free gift card. Because what I want is I want people to give this book to each other. You know, I want the mossy one to give this book and slip it under the pillow of her husband and say, you do make a difference in my life, and what you say and how you treat me does make a difference. And so the card says that, basically, and it's for free. And that's the only way we could give it to people is if they come to the website. We couldn't do it through Amazon. So
reviews, which is the word I'm trying to
say,
are wonderful. This is from David Crum. The book is designed to fit comfortably in a briefcase, purse, or backdrop. My copy has dozens of corners turned down. One of the persons said, Spot of Grace is an inspiring anthology of stories about the unsung heroes that changed our lives. I mean, Amazon just bragged all over this book, and I just think it's wonderful. And thank all of you for being with us. We're happy that you were able to bring you information about your body and mind and sound health. Please join us next week, and please do write to me and let us know what you want to hear. I think we'll bring Donna back, or there's lots of other questions and more emails that have come in. We'd love hearing from you. Write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. We'd love to talk to you about our research projects here in the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. Our website, Nutrasound.com. Thank you for joining us. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I do. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than you and I have ever known that. Think to myself, what a wonderful thing. Yeah, the colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky. A rose on the face of people going by. I see friends.